morning, Santa Fe, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We've got a packed show today, lots of people coming in. We have Rabbi Behrman from the congregation Beit Tikva, who's going to be talking about Shabbat across America. We've got artist Rocky Lewicki, and we've got the folks who made the great movie Shakespeare Behind Bars coming in toward the end of the show. Right now, I would like to welcome from Habitat for Humanity, Maggie Monroe Castle and Jesse Lawrence. By the way, we are on the we're streaming on the web at ksfr.org, and we are also at my new website, Radio Cafe at ksfr.org, which was made possible by Dotfoil Computer Services. So Maggie Monroe Castle and Jesse Lawrence are here with us. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
We're
happy to be here.
It's great to have you. Habitat for Humanity, we've had you on before. Probably a lot of people have heard of you, but don't exactly know what Habitat is.
Well, that's exactly right. I think a lot of people know a little bit about Habitat, and a few people know the whole story. So we're here to bring a little bit more of the whole story to you.
The whole story in 12 minutes or less.
In 12 seconds or less, maybe. Santa Fe Habitat, for one thing, is one of about 3,000 Habitat affiliates across the world. And we've been here since 1987, so that adds up to meaning that we're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year, our 20th birthday, and we're excited about that. We're having special celebrations throughout the year that people will hear about, not a big splash at any one time, but every event we're doing will have a little bit of a touch of the 20th anniversary on it. And some of the events I'm going to talk about very briefly, and then we're going to turn it over to Jesse to talk more about our Women Build project, which is what we want to focus on today. But some things we have coming up besides Women Build is, first of all, busting the myth that we only work certain days of the week or we only work certain times of the year. We work all year long, and spring is obviously a good time to come on board if you haven't worked with us before. But please know that you're welcome 5 days a week, Tuesdays through Saturdays. We are building houses and hoping to get more and more volunteers involved. Now, that is one of the things people do know about Habitat, is that we are a volunteer-driven organization. About two-thirds of our homes are built by volunteers. You don't need to know what you're doing. You just need to have a willingness to come on site and help us.
You don't even have to know how to screw in a screw.
Nope.
Or hammer a nail?
Nope, and if you hold that hammer wrong, we'll teach you how to hold it right to make it go in. You know, truly, you need to know nothing. I think in the course of the 3 years I've been here in Santa Fe, I've maybe run across two people who were not teachable, but that's out of thousands. So you can do it. Come aboard. We also encourage young people to participate, and in June, we have a high school build. You have to be at least 16 years old to participate in that, but 5 days a week, we're inviting high school kids 16 years of age and older to come and help us build.
Now, let's back up for a moment. Habitat for Humanity is in the business, or in the good deed doing, of building houses for people who can't afford houses. That's the bottom line?
That's right. People who cannot afford a conventional way of getting a mortgage or buying a house. So what we do is we, this leads up to another thing, thank you for reminding me, we have our application process coming up this week, starting tomorrow. Today is Tuesday, starting tomorrow, Wednesday the 25th and the 26th. Anybody who is interested in finding out if they qualify for Habitat Home needs to come to one of these two meetings. Both of them are at 6 o'clock, Wednesday and Thursday this week at the County Extension Building at the rodeo grounds, between the rodeo grounds and the Chavez Center. Absolutely, you must attend one of those meetings if you want to get an application. And then we'll be selecting only about 7 families from that process.
How in the world do you make that selection?
Well, we have some obvious things, like we first look for income level, and we build homes with people who fall between the 30 and 50% of the area median income. For a family of four, for instance, that would be between $19,800 and about $33,000. It varies depending on the size of your family. Families need to be willing to partner with us and help build their own home along with the volunteers. They have to have enough income to pay a mortgage, though it is a non-interest-bearing mortgage. So that's what makes it affordable, and all the volunteer labor is what makes it affordable.
So basically, you have to screen out people whose income is too high and those whose income is too low. Right.
That's the first step. We do look at credit checks and things like that, but it doesn't automatically disqualify you if you have a bad credit history. It's how reparable that credit history is. So it's need for simple, decent, affordable housing, its ability to pay, and its willingness to partner. That's basically the bottom line. This is not a giveaway program. It's not a we'll do it for you. It's a partner with us.
Do you have trouble making decisions on when you have all those applications in front of you?
It's very difficult for the Family Selection Committee to get down to the last, you know, the last seven that we choose. It's pretty easy to get down to 25 or 30, but to, you know, pare it down, it's a hard job. And we have a volunteer committee, a very large volunteer committee that works on all that, does the financials with people and helps them understand if they can afford it.
Now, having a volunteer organization is tricky business because they don't have the motivation to show up that you would have in a regular job where you're getting paid. And, I mean, I was just talking to a friend of mine who works in a volunteer organization, and people will come up and say, I'm feeling emotional today, and they just won't work. Do you have those kind of problems?
A very small amount. Habitat is a very compelling organization in terms of passion. We have volunteers on our site and in our ReStore who volunteer for us, you know, at least a day a week or as much as 3 or 4 days a week. And they treat it like, they're often retired, obviously, and they treat it like a job, and they treat it with respect. Obviously, they also travel and go visit grandchildren and, you know, get sick and things like that. But we really have an incredibly dedicated core of volunteers. But padding that is this other group of volunteers, which includes this high school build we're going to do and the Women Build project. And maybe that's a good segue into Women Build.
Sure. I'm a volunteer myself. I've been volunteering with Habitat for about 2 years now, mm-hmm. and I'm working with the Women Build. The Women Build is going to be a build. We're trying to encourage women to come out to the site because the vast majority of the volunteers at the work site tend to be men, and we just want to give another opportunity for people who are obviously welcome to come out any time of the year to come out on a couple specific days when we're really focusing on getting women to participate in the building. So every Saturday in May, and then the second Saturday of every month after that, we are calling it our Women Build Days, and women are welcome to contact us and sign up to come out to volunteer on those days for a very women-friendly day. We'll have women supervisors, women greeters, primarily women volunteers. And then also as part of that, we're doing training days. We're partnering with Lowe's to do trainings the Wednesdays of May, and then continuing through the year as much as we can to train in some of the things that people would do out at the site, things like installing flooring or installing trim and doing framing, things like that. So there are a number of different events that we're trying to do. In the past, Women Build has been going on since 2000 here in Santa Fe. And in the past, Women Build has been its own house. So there's been a Women Build house, and women come to work on this house. Instead, this year, to try and concentrate it and bring more of the focus on the volunteers rather than just the pressure to get this house done, we are doing it as specific days and specific building events.
What are the women like who come out? Do you find that they're women who want to learn carpentry skills and things like that? Or what's the motivation of the people who you've actually seen on the site?
There are a lot of different motivations. I think that some of them are the people who would come out any other time during the year. They just want to volunteer with us. And this is a good sort of impetus. An event is a good way to sort of sign up and start feeling it out. Some of them specifically want to learn things. They want to learn framing or installing drywall, how to work on their own homes. And some people just really feel more comfortable knowing that there will be a women-friendly group there at the site. I would say that's actually probably a minority of the volunteers that come out. Most people would come out any time, and it's just a good a good motivation, a good event to get them out. But some people feel very strongly about having women on the site.
It's interesting because it sort of brings up questions about to what extent there's still sexism about stuff like building. My sense is that that's kind of dropped off a lot over the last couple of decades. What do you think, Maggie?
I think it's still there a little bit. I think we've even seen it on our site with some of our women volunteers who are learning, who don't feel confident. It's easy for either another woman or a man to try to correct them, and it's not always in the most helpful way. And so their self-confidence deteriorates a little bit. But overall, I agree with you that we've come a long way, baby, so to speak.
Have you been doing this habitat work for a long time?
I've been doing habitat work forever.
Really?
Yeah. In one way, shape, or form, either paid in Santa Fe or as a volunteer in New York, where I started a habitat affiliate, also in 1987. And I was even doing habitat stuff before then.
So you're in a good position to observe that.
Yes, pretty much all my adult life.
Are women getting better at carpentry and building, and are men less full of attitude about women?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that is for sure. It's just some residual stuff, I think, that's hard to break. I think an indication, this isn't with habitat, but I think an indication is the number of women carpenters who you see and women contractors. There are more out there in the world. I have a couple of friends who have been, that was their profession as women. And that would have not, you wouldn't have seen that 20 years ago. So
now,
hopefully we're part of making it better.
And for those of you who want to get involved, it's easy enough to do. And we're going to give a telephone number. In fact, why don't you give that number now? We'll give it right again, once again at the end.
Are we giving your number, Jesse, or are we giving the office number?
Let's give both.
Okay. So the office number for Santa Fe Habitat is 986-5880. And while I'm giving the office information, a place to go to get all the information about us is our website. And that is simply santafehabitat, all written out, .org.
Santafehabitat.org.
Right. And you can sign up for Women Build or the high school build with our volunteer coordinator, Devin.
And you can also look at the calendar to see what building we're going
right.
to be doing. You can see what exactly is going to be happening on any day.
Now, is the high school build a new thing? Have you been doing that a lot?
That is a new thing. It's a brand new thing, and that's in cooperation with the two high schools and some other groups in the city. And we're hoping to pull some of the construction, building industries or something, I can't remember exactly the name, but pull from some of those classes to give kids an opportunity in June to come out and really be part of a community effort.
Before we go, I want to make sure we talk about the Restore, which
Thank
is a store that I went to not too long ago and bought this gorgeous filing cabinet that looked like it was out of a movie from the early 50s.
And it very well might have been. Our Restore is one of our major fundraisers, and it helps us actually buy construction materials for about 3 homes. So it is a retail used construction and household appliances and furniture store, about 16,000 square feet, not including the outside part. Everything from bathtubs to low-flow toilets. We don't sell anything but low-flow toilets. Hardware, screws, bolts, lights. Yeah, anything you can imagine could be there. It is, however, a used merchandise store, so we depend completely on donations.
Oh, so you're looking always for donations, too.
We're always looking for donations. They are obviously tax-deductible. Those donations we turn into money, and it goes back into building our homes. Another myth is that we actually take our donations and put them into the homes that we build. We don't build with any used materials, so we take everybody else's used materials, sell them, and then we purchase the new materials for our homes that way. The Restore is going to have a booth at the Santa Fe Home and Remodel Show this weekend at the Chavez Center this weekend, April 28th and 29th. So we welcome people to come to that show and to see our booth, but also to come to the store Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5. 1143 Siler Park Lane. And it's just fun to walk around. And it's very dangerous to have an office right on the other side of the wall from that store.
And why is that?
Because one tends to go over there and buy things.
And, as you and said, not everything is from the 1950s either. That was sort of an anomaly. Most of it is recent stuff.
And it's anything. It could be brand new things that are donated from one of the box stores the big hardware stores that are discontinuing an item or something. So you can get brand new things discounted. And then many used things, so cabinets, refrigerators, obviously furniture and things like that. So it's fun just to come in, and we really encourage people to see it.
Maggie Monroe Castle and Jesse Lawrence from Habitat for Humanity, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Habitat for Humanity is on the web at santafehabitat.org, and you can find out more information by calling 986-5880, just in case you want to volunteer or donate. We're going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, we will be talking about Shabbat across America. Stay tuned to KSFR.
Hi, I'm Stacey Pearl.
And I'm Angela Reese.
We are the hosts of Mouth of Wonder.
On Saturdays from 11:30 to noon.
Want to know where not to eat?
Want to know how to keep your cakes from falling?
Can't figure out which fork to use?
Need a new cocktail to add to your repertoire?
We are here for you!
So we hope you'll join us.
Saturday mornings will never be the same. After all, there's more to life than red or green.
It's a world of diversity on KSFR.
Upaya Zen Center offers a powerful retreat emphasizing the integration of mind-body practice and mountains as a manifestation of our liberated nature. Spring Session, Mountains and Monastery, May 7 to May 13th, led by Roshis Joan Halifax and Enkyo. The retreat involves alternate days between sitting in the Upaya Monastery and deep walking in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains. For information and to register, call 986-8518 or visit upaya.org. This message sponsored by Upaya Zen Center, a tax-exempt organization.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Santa Fe Farmers Market. The Farmers Market reminds you that it has moved to the parking lot of the DeVargas Center for the 2007 season. Every Saturday from 7 a.m. to noon, the market features a plethora of fruits, vegetables, meats, baked goods, and other products all grown right here in northern New Mexico, as well as serving coffee, tea, and breakfast. For more information, call 983-4098 or visit santafefarmersmarket.com.
I'd like now to welcome Rabbi Nicholas Behrman. He is from the Congregation Beit Tikva in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, this is a congregation that's been in Santa Fe for a while. Is it new?
10 years.
10 years.
10 years. It was founded with a group of people and Rabbi Leonard Hellman, who was a Santa Fe treasurer.
And it's interesting because you are Reform... It's Reform Judaism, but there's also a lot of emphasis on the Hebrew text and crash courses in Hebrew and things like that.
Correct. We see ourselves as liberal in terms of tradition, but traditional in terms of spirituality.
What does that mean? What do those two different things mean? Liberal in terms of tradition.
We constantly wrestle with it, which means that our services are traditional with a lot of traditional music and traditional prayers. But we also sometimes do experiences in the services. So we, for example, the Sabbath Across America coming up, where we want to take the words and make them come alive.
Well, let's talk about that. Shabbat Across America, what is that?
It was
America and Canada.
America and Canada. About 10 years ago, an organization realized that we have to reach out to people who might have moved away from their tradition for various reasons. Maybe they intermarried, maybe they had a bad experience at their bar mitzvah.
Oh my goodness, is there that? People had a bad experience at their bar mitzvah and
well,
then they...
Well, you know, kids at 13 don't want to spend all their time studying text. They want to be out playing baseball or watching TV, so... Anyway, this Sabbath Across America came up as an opportunity for synagogues such as ours to reach out to people and say, look, this is going to be a different kind of experience. You know, you don't have to leave your beliefs at the door. Come in, experience a Sabbath dinner, experience storytelling, For our kids, we're going to have activities that will keep them busy and just meet other people.
Now, is intermarriage a problem? I mean, do people leave their congregations, leave the tradition of their past if they marry somebody who's a Gentile?
Well, many of them feel that they have to, because most rabbis will not officiate at such a marriage. I do, and Rabbi Hellman does, because we believe in keeping doors open. But there are people who've had the door closed, and so they've kind of moved away, and this is an opportunity for them to come back and feel comfortable.
So what are your services like?
Well, you should come to one of them on a Friday night, and we usually have services at 7:30. And
where do you have them?
Well, I always get the address confused, so let me... We're at 2230 Old Pecos Trail. Our building has been in existence for about a year and a half now. And again, at 7:30, you don't have to know Hebrew to come in. You can just hum along. And we welcome guests. We do a lot of explanation of what the services are about. And we always have good food afterwards.
What is an example of what a certain service might be about?
Well, usually we will take our Torah, which is written in parchment. It's the five books of Moses. And we take the Torah out of the ark. We march it around so everybody has a chance to touch the outside of the Torah, to feel that it's theirs. Our tradition tells us that the Torah belongs to everybody, and everybody can study it. And so we take the Torahs around.
Whereas traditionally only certain people got to study it?
Very traditionally, yes. But in the last 2,000 years, there's been the openness. But usually men study Torah. Women have a different role. But in our congregation, women can study it as well and are encouraged.
Well, that's one of the things that you've written is... one of the principles of your congregation is that men and women having equal roles and sharing responsibilities.
Right. And so, again, not only we march the Torah around, but we also read from it. And we translate as we go. Some of the passages are easier to deal with than others. We encourage questions from the congregation. So that's an example of the type of thing that we do on a Friday night.
We're talking to Rabbi Nicholas Behrman. So are there things coming up that you wanted to let our listeners know about?
Well, especially this Sabbath Across America, which is next, not this coming Friday night, but May 4th. And we encourage guests. They can call 505-820-2991. Again, that's 505-820-2991, and get more information. The dinner, I think, will start at 6 o'clock. And it would be a nice mixture of good food, good company, and music, and talk about the importance of the Sabbath, which we make a commercial for that. You know, we all work so hard 6 days a week. And our belief is that we spend a day separating ourselves from the act of creation and getting into what we call recreation of ourselves. Our tradition tells us that an extra soul is given to us on the Sabbath.
An extra soul?
An extra soul. And that soul's been resting up for the past 6 days. So it can kind of, it's like a battery. It takes over for that 24 hours and lets our weekday soul recreate, you know, get rest. And it's not, rest is not just sleeping, even though that's important. I enjoy that.
I enjoy it very much.
But it's also just, what's the expression, stop and smell the roses?
Right, right.
You know, just kind of enjoy the sunsets, enjoy Santa Fe.
Yeah, I think we forget the roots of the word recreation.
Right. Exactly, because we get so tied up and making sure that we have the right equipment to do that and so forth. So the Sabbath for us is that signal that it's time to just take it easy.
So when is this special event that you want to invite people to?
This is a week from Friday night, May 4th.
May 4th.
And again, the phone number is 505-820-2991. And then we have a couple of other events besides our normal Friday night services, which start at 7:30. On May 9th, I'm going to lead a lunch discussion on the book of Ecclesiastes, from which we have to everything there is a season to
right.
That comes from that book. And then on May 22nd, we're going to do an adult study session on the book of Ruth, because that ties in with the festival of the weeks, or Shavuot, on May 22nd. So those are a couple of outreach and education type of things we're going to be doing. And we encourage people to come. They don't have to know anything. They just have an interest in Jewish spirituality, along with all of the other spiritualities that Santa Fe is known for.
Well, Rabbi Behrman, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Good, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
And once again, the number is 820-2991 for more information. We're going to take another little break right now, and we'll be talking to artist Rocky Lewicki in just a moment. Stay tuned.
KSFR programming is underwritten by Locals Care. Locals Care community cards reward you for shopping and dining at over 100 locally owned businesses. You can support a Santa Fe nonprofit and earn rewards for yourself at any Locals Care business. Find program information and a current list of participating businesses and nonprofits at locals-care.com. Offered in cooperation with the Santa Fe Alliance and sponsored by Century Bank, Los Alamos National Bank, the New Mexican, and the City of Santa Fe. The Georgia O'Keeffe Museum presents an evening of art and poetry on Tuesday, April 24th at 7 p.m. Acclaimed contemporary poet Maymay Bersenbrugge will read selected poems among works by O'Keeffe. Elegant and ethereal, intellectual and intuitive, Maymay often collaborates with visual artists such as Kiki Smith and her husband Richard Tuttle. Reservations are suggested at 946-1039. This message is sponsored by the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum, a tax-exempt organization.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Garcia Street Books and their owners, Eva and Edward Borens, celebrating more than 30 years as booksellers. Located at 376 Garcia Street, where Ann Cummins, author of The Red Ant House and recipient of a Lannan Foundation Fellowship, signs Yellow Cake on Thursday, April 26th at 5 p.m. More information at 986-0151 or garciastreetbooks.com.
I would like now to welcome Rocky Lewicki. He is an artist, and his work is appearing at a show at the Bang Gallery. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Ah, thank you, Mary Charlotte. Thanks for having me.
This is part of a big group show, but your piece is a really extraordinary piece. It's called A Prayer for Al-Qaeda, and it was made by drilling many, many tiny little holes through a huge piece of heavy velvet paper. Tell us about the piece.
Sure, that's right. So there's thousands of holes that I've sort of meticulously drilled through a piece of heavy velvet paper. I've scanned Afghanistan rug patterns in a Photoshop and manipulated them. I've cataloged different parts of the rug into beginnings, middles, and ends so that I can then sort of scale my own rug, make the size and scale that I want without giving it a stretched or skewed look.
So it's like it's sort of like a rug, but it's paper.
Exactly.
It sits on the ground, or it stands up.
It stands up. So what the medium is light on paper. All the drilled holes then turn into light that penetrates through the paper, and the sort of rug patterns that I've come up with show through the paper. The rug patterns that I've taken, I stretched into the template of an American flag. So it's basically an American flag made out of Afghanistan rugs. And the piece is called Prayer for Al-Qaeda. It's essentially a prayer for the fears of Americans. We're in pretty screwed up political climate right now, and this is sort of a reflection on media's prescribed hatred and fears that they're sort of injecting into our culture right now. So that's essentially what the piece is about.
Now, the whole name of the piece is A Prayer for Al-Qaeda, A Jungian Approach.
Sure.
What's the Jungian angle?
Well, it's this sort of collective unconscious, you know, this idea that we're all sort of connected in the sort of energy that we put out there to other cultures in response to this fear is it's not, I don't think, the right way to go. We need to project a little bit more love and a little bit more kindness. And so that's essentially why I named it that. The first time I showed this piece, I was a little bit nervous about just calling it Prayer for Al-Qaeda. So I put this Jungian approach so people would have a little more insight into the piece. But then the next series, The Blood Works, Prayer for Al-Qaeda, will just be Prayer for Al-Qaeda.
And we'll have you on again because that's an intense piece that's coming up. But this is not only a conceptual piece, as you've been discussing, but it's also visually very beautiful. I saw it recently in a state of under construction, I think, you know, still partly under construction. And it made me think about, I mean, it's a prayer for Al-Qaeda. It's also for you. It must be kind of a meditation because making all those tiny little holes in a piece of paper, this is something you can't accomplish in a couple of days.
No, this is a major project. It's a 150, 200-hour project for my samples, and then, you know, the real deal is just endless. But it is a very meditative process. Actually, the ceramic series that I'm working on has the same technique, and I'm starting to name this whole series the Posture Series. And it's about sort of strengthening physically and also my mind and just being able to sit in one place and drill holes or poke, you know, a needle into clay for extended hours of time is sort of strengthening my mind. And then hopefully that sort of awareness and energy will translate into the piece.
That's interesting because the posture concept also could be, one could think of it as the kind of political posturing.
Sure, sure. So hopefully it'll all come through in the piece. Who knows?
Now, this is all a production of the Bang Gallery, who are on the web at bangartgallery.com. And the show opens on Friday. You're one of many artists in it at the Farrell Fischhoff Gallery at 1807 2nd Street, number 29. It's across from Cloud Cliff.
Sure.
And it's from 5 to 8, and it runs through May 2nd. So that's a quickie.
Yeah, it is a quickie. Bang was started by Dave Solomon about 2 years ago. And he did a great job with just bringing contemporary emerging artists within Santa Fe and just giving them quick shows so Santa Feans can get a little preview of, you know, sort of underground artists that are out there. And it's a great little gig. And can I mention a website that they can go to see the piece? If you can go to RocksArt, that's R-O-C-K-S, art, A-R-T.com. And if you click on news, there'll be a link to the Prayer for Al-Qaeda piece. And then Robert Nichols Gallery also shows my ceramic work and with a similar sort of theme behind it.
Rocky Lewicki, thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Shelley.
We're going to take a break right now, and we're going to be talking about the film Shakespeare Behind Bars in just a moment. Stay tuned to KSFR.
Outpost Productions and Padmini continue their celebration of Padmini's 10th anniversary with a much-anticipated concert event featuring the legendary tabla virtuoso Zakir Hussain and India's greatest living santur player, Pandit Shiv Kumar Sharma. Tuesday, April 24th, 7 p.m. at the Lensic in Santa Fe. For info, call 268-0044 or visit outpostspace.org. This message sponsored by Outpost Productions, a tax-exempt organization.
College of Santa Fe presents CAMP, Art and Sustainability, a two-day outdoor art exhibition at Hyde Memorial State Park. Regional artists and designers address sustainability in this year's theme, Miniature and Monumental. Works range from solar-powered video to suspended pod sculptures to performance art. Opening reception Friday, April 27th, 4 to 10 p.m. with Round Mountain. The exhibit continues Saturday the 28th from 10 to 8. More information at 983-7175. The College of Santa Fe is a tax-exempt organization.
It's Ron Bloomberg, just a voice in the crowd. You know what I'm a sucker for? A good farmer's market. That's America. Local farmers bring in their produce and plants and jams and jellies and baked goods. Old friends greeting each other after a winter's hibernation, walking from stand to stand. Hit it, boys.
The farmer and the cowman should be friends. Oh, the farmer and the cowman should be friends. Oh, one man likes to push a plow, the other likes to chase a cow, but that's the reason why they can't be friends.
So a farmer's market opened in back at DeVargas Mall. Went out there Saturday, got there 5:30 in the morning. I like to see the trucks unload. There's a handful of us that do that, go from farmer's market to farmer's market, watching the trucks unload. Hey, Jim, here comes a cucumber truck. Whoa, look at that one loaded with hollyhocks. Hey, we're not crazy. We're like bird watchers. There's a yellow-billed cuckoo. There's a rhubarb truck. Same thing. The other activity I like to do at a farmer's market is squeeze the produce. It's more exhilarating than squeezing produce at a supermarket. I go from stand to stand, squeezing fruits and vegetables. And if one of them squeezes back, I know that's the one for me. Before they lock me away, I think I'll switch to another subject. Chicago.
Come on, babe, why don't we paint the town and all that jazz?
And all that jazz.
I'm gonna rouge my knees and roll my stockings down and all that jazz.
I'm no critic, but the musical now running at College of Santa Fe is sensational. I saw it on Broadway, and I enjoyed this production just as much. These college kids are talented, energetic. If you can get tickets, don't miss it. All right, I've got a sudden urge to squeeze a grapefruit and all that jazz. Talk to you next week, if you have a minute.
KSFR's Ron Bloomberg can be heard each Tuesday on the Radio Cafe, Thursdays after the news at noon, and Saturdays after Bob Edwards, just before the 10 o'clock hour.
I'd like now to welcome Hank Rogerson and Jillian Spitzmiller. They are director and producer of a film called Shakespeare Behind Bars, which is screening today at the screen at 7 o'clock. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
I just watched this movie actually over the last couple of days in a couple of parts. It's an incredible movie about somebody who goes into a prison and basically creates a theater troupe made up of prisoners who perform Shakespeare. How did you find out about this, and how did you get involved in making a film about it?
Well, it actually originally came about, I was wanted to make a film about acting, of all things, and this was the result. I mean, I wanted to sort of capture the process of putting together a character, and I was just on the lookout for a way to do it, and came across the idea of theater being done in prison, and that seemed really intriguing to me, and seemed to be a film that would be about acting, but a whole lot more. And then I even came across the idea of Shakespeare being done in prison. And through my research, I found a program in Kentucky, which is the one we ultimately ended up following.
One of the things that's amazing about it is that the prisoners who are playing these roles, the play that we're watching through rehearsal is The Tempest, and they talk about the fact that they understand the characters so well, because of course Shakespeare is full of villains and scoundrels and people who have done heinous things, and so have they. And playing the characters is something. I mean, one of the prisoners says something along the lines of, "I don't know how anybody who hasn't committed a crime could ever play this role."
Yeah, it's true. They bring so much personal experience to the role of a murderer that we couldn't do that ourselves, you know. And it makes it really rich to watch them search for the places in the character that they connect with, and in those really dark places, a lot of times that's where they can heal, because they have to face what they did, and it's easier to face it through the journey of a character who's kind of helping them along, you know. And Kurt, the volunteer director, is really great at kind of pulling them and pushing them when they're ready. And you have to be ready emotionally to join this group, you know, because Kurt is tough on them. And so if you're not ready to face your shadows, you're not going to make it.
But there's a number of people in the prison who really are ready, and you see a kind of emotional honesty on the faces of these prisoners. And for you as a filmmaker to have brought that out in them was really extraordinary. I mean, these people are as vulnerable as they can possibly be.
Well, it was, I feel fortunate, because we came to the program after it had been going for 7 years. This was their eighth year of doing a play every year. And so they'd been working with Kurt. I mean, how many acting troops are out on, you know, in the real world, on the street, that have the privilege of working with the same people and the same director year after year after year? I mean, and that's the way that Shakespeare did it. Shakespeare worked with the same actors year after year after year. You know, he'd write a play and then they'd all put it on. So by the time...
And also with some men in the female
right,
roles.
Which is what they do in the Shakespeare program at Luther Luckett in Kentucky. So Yeah, I mean, we came to them after they'd been working together, and Kurt had been working with them. So there was a certain, you know, aspect of comfortableness with them and a willingness to be vulnerable. You know, and our style as filmmakers is very observational, and we're really good listeners. So we, and these people were happy to have someone there to listen.
It's patience, too. I mean, we filmed over a year, so you don't get the great stuff the first time you go. You have to keep going back and getting to know people and giving them something from yourself as well, you know.
Yeah, it's very much, go ahead.
It's a give and take.
Yeah.
And it's scary in the process, you know, because you're making yourself vulnerable, too, and especially in a prison. It felt very uncomfortable, but that's the process.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't there for the three-minute news story. We had to go in and build those relationships and choose the time to say, okay, why are you here? What did you do? And because if you don't choose the right time, then the wall goes up, and,
that's right.
And it's hard to get past that wall again.
We're talking about the film Shakespeare Behind Bars, which screens tonight at 7 o'clock at the screen on the campus of the College of Santa Fe. I mean, those were some extraordinary moments in the film where you said to these guys who were, I mean, they committed crimes like killing their wives and girlfriends and strangling people and child molesting and stuff like that. I mean, it wasn't smoking pot or something like that. It was serious, yeah. Horrifying crimes. You ask them why they did it, what happened, and they tell you. And they tell you in this way which is so full of remorse and introspection. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty extraordinary. But again, you know, people aren't going to tell you... people are only going to tell you what they want to tell you when they want to tell you. So it was a matter of choosing those moments, and the fact that they were in this Shakespeare program, this art program, this theater program, where it is about, you know, being vulnerable. It's things change when they walk in that rehearsal room. They're a different person out on the yard. They have to put up the macho front, but when they walk into that rehearsal room, you know, there are certain people in that room who are going the distance, and they're really letting it all hang out, and others observe, wow, look what he's getting out of this by just unraveling, basically. So they see that commitment, and they all strive for that as well. So we were associated with that environment, if you
right,
will,
right.
and
I mean, one of the things that was extraordinary about it also, and that I really appreciated, was that you really didn't focus on the director. And I was thinking probably a lot of films would have made the choice to focus on the great Mother Teresa-like charity of this director who heals these other guys. You barely see the director. He's there. You understand his presence. But it's really about the guys. It's about the prisoners.
Yeah, well, that's where the healing's taking place. That's where the transformation's taking place. That's where the incredible juxtapositions of who these guys were and what they're becoming is happening. You know, Kurt is, we all understand Kurt and what he does, but I think we were looking to understand what causes someone to commit a crime and how do they move on from that and how do we as a society look at that.
And reintegrate people. I mean, one of the things that I was thinking while watching the film is inevitably in a film like this, you're going to fall in love with these people because you show their most vulnerable sides. At the same time, I thought I would really not like to be sitting on the parole board trying to make a decision on whether these people are ready to go out into society again, because you have no idea. Looking at them, looking at the way they behave, you can't even imagine that they would commit the crimes that they've committed.
Right.
Well, and you as a film viewer, you probably know more about them than the parole board does when they go up. I mean, you got to see much more into their lives than a parole board would. The parole board's looking at a file, some paper. You know, the person is there most of the time, but they don't really get to speak or, you know.
Right, right. But at the same time, you still don't know how much they've healed.
Exactly.
Is there any follow-up? I mean, at the end of the film, there's some follow-up on these men, but have you been able to see, the film's just a couple of years old now, whether they've gone back into society and made it?
Several of the people in the program have gotten out, and they've actually joined us in Q&As when the film is shown back east. And, you know, they're holding down jobs, and they're...
One just had a baby, Bulldog. He plays Ariel in the play. He's working construction. He got married. He has a baby. But we should say that the recidivism rate for the guys who've gone through the Shakespeare program is 0%. The guys who've gone through Shakespeare, gotten out of prison, there's over 100 people who've done that now, 100 men. Only two of them have gone back to prison for minor parole violations. They haven't recommitted a crime. They just violated their parole.
So it does work.
It does seem to work. And the average recidivism rate in the country is over 50%. So
we're talking about the movie Shakespeare Behind Bars with Jillian Spitzmiller and Hank Rogerson. It screens tonight at 7 o'clock at the Screen. in the end... you're watching these people in rehearsal, and there are some amazing moments where they're reciting these lines from Shakespeare, and you think these people are not only going through a therapeutic and personal process, but they're good actors. When you saw the play at the end, was it good, or was it like sort of going to the junior high, you know, recital?
Well, I don't know if we're the best judges of that, because we've been through that whole process with them from day one, so we felt sort of a part of the production, if you will. When we were making the film, we were wondering, you know, is it about the performance or is it about the process? And that became very clear, you know, after just a few months, that it was about the process. And we were afraid somewhat of the waiting for Guffman syndrome, where the performance, you know, performance comes on and people just laugh because, you know, they're not all that professional, if you will. But the fact of the matter is that we felt that by going through that process and showing these men in rehearsal and then, you know, processing their roles and talking about their crimes, that by the time you got to the performance, the audience would be with you. And they wouldn't care if it looked like a high school or a junior high performance. They would just be along for the ride and rooting for everybody. So that's the sort of the way we set it up. And, I mean, I just want to say one thing about... You know, this is a program that works for certain people. The main point to make, I think, is that education is what works. 'Cause there are studies out there that prove that education cuts down on recidivism. Whether it's Shakespeare in prison or it's, you know, learning how to be a carpenter or whatever it is, or getting getting your diploma, getting a degree in something. Because, you know, this program wasn't for everybody at that prison by any means. It was just for certain people who were willing to try it out. Because people would join and drop it, you know. Say,
well, there's a hilarious moment where there's this one guy who actually does drop out, who says, you know, I come into this prison and everybody's talking Shakespeare, Shakespeare, Shakespeare. And you think, what? You know, everyone's talking about Shakespeare in the prison. And this guy clearly is less intelligent than his peers in the play and just doesn't hack it. He doesn't make it through, and he does something where he gets put in solitary confinement, and that's it with him. But the people who do make it through this program and who stay with it, they're clearly people of, you know, serious intelligence. They're in jail for whatever reason, but they're not the dregs of society in terms of their abilities.
Well, I think some of them are surprised by what they can do. I think some of them were high school dropouts, or, you know, there's an older guy who we didn't really follow as much named Gene, but he is sprinkled throughout the film. And he basically, you know, Southern boy, not much education, and he completely surprised himself that he could master this text and then really go out there and perform. So it gives people an opportunity for a sense of accomplishment.
Now tonight, in addition to screening the film at 7 o'clock at the Screen, you're also going to have a panel discussion with the two of you and some people from corrections, from education, and our great friend Mara Taub, who's been on this show a couple of times from the Coalition for Prisoners' Rights. Is that after the film?
Yeah. It'll be a panel discussion following the film. The film is at 7 at the Screen. And the film's about 90 minutes, so the panel will take place about 8:30.
Has the film that you know of influenced others, other prison wardens to start things like this? There's quite an enlightened prison warden in the Kentucky facility.
Yeah, he was amazing. And, you know, without him, the program wouldn't be there. It's not funded through the prison. It's Kurt Toflin, who comes in from the outside as the director, raises money for it. But he wouldn't be able to get in there without the warden.
And we wouldn't have been able to make the film without that particular very progressive warden, I think. But
I'm not aware of any...
We've gotten a lot of communication from people who say, I'd like to start something like this, or I'm in the process of starting something like this, and your film will help us, you know, show what we can do. But there are a few other Shakespeare programs in the country, and a lot of, I think, prison theater programs. But I think it supports the people out there who, you know, want to begin or continue something like this.
Yeah, anybody who's listening to the radio right now who works in corrections is required to show up tonight at the screen at 7 o'clock. I'm serious. You have to go. Because the film, besides everything else, is just a joy to watch. You must have shot infinite amounts of footage. Was it hard to edit?
Yeah, the editing process took over a year, so it was. But you know, as you're filming, those moments pop out at you. And I always just keep notes as I go along. And then I just sit down and watch the footage, and, you know, those moments would pop out at me again. So, you know, it's, yes, you have to be patient as a documentary filmmaker and shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot. You know, either the story is there or it isn't. So we were fortunate to have the drama happening, you know, just by the simple premise of what was going on.
And, of course, the film has a natural ending point, which is the performance of the play, which is very sweet because there's all these civilians in the audience dressed up in ties and dresses and so on and with programs, and it feels like a regular old theater performance.
Yeah, and then reality hits, I think, when the play is over. And the guys have to go back. And then they have a couple months off. And during the summer, when they're not rehearsing with Kurt, Kurt has told them what the next play is. And by the time he comes back in September, usually they all know what part they want, or they're jostling for the part. They know the play already, and, you know, they take it very seriously. It's a way for them to have some freedom.
Well, the play is Shakespeare Behind Bars. It screens tonight at 7 o'clock at the screen at the College of Santa Fe. I do want to let people know that it actually opened 2 years ago at Sundance, and it's gotten a large amount of visibility in the theater and the festival circuit, film festival circuit, and it's also screened on the Sundance channel on television. Tonight is the one night that it's screening in Santa Fe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, your evening plans should be set by now. Jill-Ann Spitzmiller and Hank Rogerson, producer and director of Shakespeare Behind Bars, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks,
Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org, and this program can be heard at any time of day at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to DotFoil Computer Services of Santa Fe on the web at dotfoil.com. You can reach me at the email address radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the Jazz Hoedown. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow. Ciao.